We have five cases on our calendar this morning. Two from the PTAB, one from the Veterans Court, one from the District Court, one from the Claims Court, the latter being submitted on the briefs and not argued. Our first case is Unilock versus Facebook, 2019-2162 and 2160. Counsel, would you pronounce your name for us, please?
It's Coity, Your Honor.
Coity. Please proceed, Mr. Coity.
Thank you. May it please the court, at the outset, and in view of the Rule 28J letter submitted by the appellee cross appellants, Unilock will withdraw its claim, its appeal for claims 27 and 39 from this appeal. To give you more of a roadmap, Unilock had also appealed independent claim 38 solely under Arthex, but with Unilock's waiver, which the other side consents to, that claim has been withdrawn as well.
Which claims are withdrawn?
The independent claims, Your Honor, are 27, 39, and 38.
Well, you devoted three quarters of your brief to claim 27, and that has essentially been settled by the decision in the other case, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're waiving it. We aren't putting a label on how, whether it's issue preclusion or just the reasoning, but we are not contesting it any longer.
So you are appealing what, 3, 24, and 39?
No, 39 we are not appealing, Your Honor.
So, all right.
That's a dependent claim off 38. We are not appealing that one.
3 and 24 then?
Yes, Your Honor. Right. So let me briefly address those two claims. And as Your Honor noted, it's not the bulk of our briefing, so the issues are fairly concise. For claim three, the board's judgment should be reversed because the board did not explain why Opposita would have modified Zidney to result in the limitation of claim three. Here, the board credited Dr. Lavian's testimony, the testimony of the petitioners, but neither the board nor Dr. Lavian addressed RFC 1521, that it doesn't equate the so-called body of the message to an object of the message that uses the words fields only in the context of the headers that are distinct from the body of the message. So, again, the argument's very brief, but 1521 on the first two pages states that there are fields and there are many statements that they describe the distinct message body. They don't state that the fields include any data. So here, Dr. Lavian's testimony can't constitute a substantial evidence because it conflicts with RFC 1521. And that's our argument on claim three. For claim 24, the board's decision should be reversed because the board failed to explain why it disagreed with Unilock's teaching away evidence. In particular, Unilock provided evidence that Zidney teaches away from using HTTP as a transport mechanism. We had the testimony of our expert, Mr. Eastham. That's at Appendix 3462, paragraph 51. And he testified that Zidney could not have functioned as described because HTTP did not have compression in August 2000, which is Zidney's filing date. And then Zidney itself...
Counselor, are you arguing that any time a different technology is used that we have a situation involving teaching away?
No, Your Honor, that's not, if that was what we were, that's not what we were arguing in our brief, and that's a good question. We aren't arguing just the mere temporal situation. It's the fact that Zidney itself expressly states that it's using then existing hardware, and then, it's a teaching away of the specific references of these, of this particular case and these particular references. It's not, we aren't arguing that just because there's a temporal difference in two references, they can't be combined. Zidney itself at 11, this is at Appendix 422, column 11, 14 to 16, as I just stated, says it uses data compression of then existing software. And even if the board just stated, we have kind of two levels. First of all, we've presented evidence, and then the The board's addressing of this issue was very cursory. It just says, well, we disagree of the teaching away. It didn't engage in any principled reasoning. It didn't even acknowledge that Mr. Eastham had submitted his declaration on this issue. There's two issues. There's, you know, the issue of, first of all, we think there was substantial evidence to conflict with it. And then secondly, as a matter of a process, they didn't really engage and address this as they're required to do.
What do you think is the most important overlooked piece of what you said they didn't attend to?
I think it's the fact that they didn't, there's a one line where it says they argued teaching away. They didn't acknowledge that we had expert testimony for it. They didn't acknowledge that expert testimony either. So it just was a very cursory, they taught teaching away and then says we disagree, if you look at the opinion. So the board failed to provide an explanation why the evidence would not be an obstacle to motivation to combine. Again, just merely stated, just disagrees. Unless the court has questions about the cross appeal, I will respond to petitioner's arguments on cross appeal together with my rebuttal. I don't have any more. I'll probably reserve the balance unless the court has any questions on the two appeal issues.
We will reserve the balance for you. Fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Keefe.
Thank you, Your Honors. So just so that I make sure that the record is very clear, I understand that only claims 3 and 24 at issue. The only claim I didn't hear described was claim 22. I believe that's also been withdrawn. Is that correct?
I understand that.
Thank you, Your Honors. With respect to the first issue, which is that of the object field, we strongly believe that there is substantial evidence that supports the board's decision regarding the object field. The only argument that I seem to have heard today was that simply RFC 1521 doesn't just necessarily describe exactly which field. It just uses the word field, and that's not enough. But that's not what the board relied on. The board didn't rely simply on the notion that RFC 1521 used the word field. Instead, the board credited Dr. Lavian's detailed explanation of why you would have to have an object field. In fact, the board said that it was unrebutted that Dr. Lavian said that one of ordinary skill in the art would find that you had to have an object field in order to understand how to play back the voice data, because otherwise you wouldn't know where the voice data began and where it ended within the container itself. And that was exactly what the board actually relied on, and the citation for that reliance is the unrebutted testimony of Dr. Lavian at paragraphs 141 and through 144 of his declaration, which is found at appendix 54. And so it's actually at the very bottom of 54. We credit Dr. Lavian's unrebutted testimony supported by 1521. In other words, not relying solely on 1521, that when in MIME format, Zidney's voice container would contain the digitized audio file, i.e. the voice data, in an object field, citing to the record itself. So we believe that alone is substantial evidence that supports the board's determination. With respect to...
Can you just clarify for me?
Absolutely.
Was that testimony that one would therefore find in Zidney an object field, or in RFC 1521, or that... people or what?
But what that testimony was that Zidney itself teaches that one of the things that you would do in order to send your materials is you would use MIME. And in using HTTP and MIME, you would then have an object field. And so what Dr. Lavian is saying is Zidney says, please use MIME, and HTTP is a good way, but use MIME in order to send my data. What Dr. Lavian says is once we use MIME, we have object fields. So it's Zidney itself describing what it would use, and then Dr. Lavian saying, by virtue of that explanation, it is obvious that those fields would be included. So that is the substantial evidence that supports the record.
To what extent was that rebutted by the other side?
It was not, Your Honor. And in fact, if you look at the board's determination, the board found that that was unrebutted testimony, and that was what I was just reading from at Appendix 54. Thank you, Your Honors. With respect to Claim 24, this is the notion of a connection object that must be found. And the connection object is essentially how you're going to make sure that each system knows what each other system is doing. The only argument that we have heard is that it's the combination itself that somehow there's a teaching away from the combination, not that the combination does not include the elements. And the argument regarding the combination doing some form of teaching away seems to be that because data compression is required, you wouldn't use HTTP, but that's absolutely not supported by the record at all. Instead, what we point out in our both in our response here, but also in our petition and our reply down below, is that ZDNI itself actually requires no form of compression whatsoever. There is nothing requiring compression. ZDNI says, if you're going to compress, go ahead and use whatever local hardware or software you have. That just means if you've got something you want compressed, figure out what you want to do with it down below. Then once that exists as a bundle, you need to figure out how to send it somewhere. And HTTP is a normal way to send it because you're using TCIP in ZDNI. ZDNI's very clear about that. ZDNI also says HTTP would be a logical thing to use because it is independent of all of the other systems. So you can send whatever you want through HTTP. Therefore, the compression is actually irrelevant. The compression has nothing to do with anything. And what the board found was that it credited Dr. Lavian's discussion and description of the fact that the combination is simply saying, take any message that you're going to use, put it in HTTP, and then send it, and that would be the reason for the combination. And that's what the board found. The fact that the board rejected the arguments does not mean that the board did not do a substantial dive into the evidence. In fact, they credited the fact that the argument was made, and then they simply said, we disagree. And they used Dr. Lavian's explanation of how all of these things would work together as their substantial evidence of why the combination would, in fact, be proper. And that language, Your Honor, can be found, for example, in the final written decision at Appendix 103 through 108. But the other evidence that the board had in front of it comes from 2882 through 2883, where we talk about the fact that the compression is, in fact, irrelevant, and that was part of the record before the board as well. So that also supports with substantial evidence.
You want to deal with the cross appeal?
I'd like to, Your Honor. Thank you very much. So the cross appeal, Your Honor, is actually quite simple. The notion here is that throughout the petition and the reply, we made very careful to note that the IVM was no longer simply the container. So the instant voice message for claims 4 and 5 was not the simple container of ZDNI, because we acknowledge that the simple container of ZDNI did not have the fields like the action field required by dependent claims 4 and 5. Instead, we look to see, is there something else that would transform that message into an instant voice message that did have the field?
Just to be clear, what you're saying is that consistently in the petition, I'm not sure what consistently is doing there, for claim 4.
That's correct.
You said that the instant voice message includes more than the ZDNI.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Piece.
That's absolutely correct.
And I gather that sort of the gist of this is that since for everything else that you were challenging, you didn't do that. You did actually equate the ZDNI piece to this. You had to be clearer than you were on page, 38 of the petition or something, to make it apparent to the board that you were actually suddenly doing a different mapping.
That's correct.
And that this isn't clear enough. I think so, that's the theory.
That is the theory here, Your Honor. And I think so we actually believe that the petition itself was clear, and that's at Appendix 2675, where we say that the combination would have resulted in the voice container being carried in an HTTP message that includes the action field. That then becomes the instant voice message. When we saw the opposition, we realized that maybe it hadn't been as clear because it was misinterpreted by patent owner. And patent owner said, but you wouldn't make that combination because you wouldn't stick the action field into the container. And so what we did in the reply is we came out very clearly and said that the patent owner's argument misstates the actual combination. And we acknowledged that we were not placing the action field into the container, but instead we were placing the container into a larger message that then itself becomes the instant voice message. And the way that the final written decision tracks, it actually acknowledges that these things happen. It says, and then they clarified that they were making the combination with the HTTP message, which includes the post command, which would then be the action field. But then, with no explanation whatsoever, the FWD reverts back and says, but since the voice container doesn't include the field, and you admit that, I find there's nothing there. Well, Your Honor, as a simple matter of logic, if we were relying solely on the container, we've already admitted that the container doesn't have the action field. So why did we spend pages and pages of an obviousness combination explaining that we now have a new message that contains the container as the object, as the transported message, with the rest of the headers? And so we did make that exceedingly clear in Appendix 2875, where we say, we explain why we're doing the combination so that you have the container of Zidney as the payload of the HTTP message. And now that message is the instant voice message. We wrap up the whole discussion with a sentence that says, the Zidney voice container, which itself is transported as the payload of an HTTP message that discloses the claimed instant voice message. So we're saying that's now what we're calling the instant voice message.
What was the passage that you were just referring?
It's the very end of 2875. It's the sentence that begins, therefore. Therefore, the Zidney voice container, now we have an appositive, transported as the payload of an HTTP message disclosing.
This is in the reply.
This is in the reply, yeah, that's correct. Okay, cool. And so again, we're clarifying in the reply what we already said. We said, we just want to make sure that you understand that when we were talking about using the post message, it was as the instant voice message. We again believe that that was clear in the petition.
There's a fair bit of law trying to be somewhat clearer about an inherently unclear standard about just how clear you need to be in the petition. You don't get to revise things in the reply.
Correct.
Conceding that they were accepting for a moment that the reply is really quite clear, it seems to me this comes down to whether the petition was clear enough. I'm not quite sure what to make of an argument that says the petition must have been saying this because otherwise we would have dropped the ball, which is not quite...
I'd love to say that that's not exactly what I'm saying,
no,
Your Honor.
But it's not the clearest distinction in the world for me between what you did say and what I just...
Your Honor, but we didn't drop the ball. What the petition says...
And this is a matter... We do judge this under an abuse of discretion standard, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And so it's whether or not there is substantial evidence to support the board's finding. And our argument here, Your Honor, is there can't be substantial evidence because what the board did contradicts the evidence in the record. The board said we are only using the container as the instant voice message, but the evidence in the record contradicts using the voice container as the instant voice message because in the petition itself, when we talk about the combination, and this is in the petition at Appendix 2675, which cites Tulavian at Appendix 359 and 360, the petition says that when you combine Zidney with Hethmon with no other changes in their respective functions, that would have resulted in the voice container being carried in an HTTP message that includes the action field. So we've changed the message. The message is the HTTP message. It is not the container. And that was clear. And Lavian's expert declaration describes why that is a good thing to do, because now the message that's being transported is that HTTP message. Then all we did was clarify that in the reply. So the reason that substantial evidence cannot support the board's finding is because the evidence contradicts using just the container as the instant voice message.
Thank you. We will give you 2 minutes back for rebuttal.
I appreciate it, Your Honors. Thank you very much for your attention and time.
Mr. Coyde.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me clean up the record a little about the claims. The one thing I would say about Claim 22, which was asked, Your Honor, recall that Claim 22 has the same language as Claim 39. They're both dependent claims, and so we link those in our briefs. So we are waiving the arguments for the added claim language of 22. But Claim 22 depends on Claim 3, and as I noted earlier, that's the independent claim that we are still seeking reversal on. So we are not totally walking away from Claim 22. We are conceding the issues that were briefed in identified in the briefing as relating to 22 and 39, if that's clear. But I just wanted to make that clear. Let me turn first to the cross appeal. I was kind of new to this case, and so in getting to speed, I think one thing which I'm sure Your Honor's appreciated, but I just want to flag, is what's important in reading this record is, you know, there are two final written decisions. In the final written decision where Claim 4 is addressed, the Claim 3 was not challenged, and that's IPR 1688. It was not challenged. Only Claims 4, 5, and 12 were challenged, or at least in this discussion relevant to germane to this issue. So that is key, Your Honor, because the discussion of Claim 3, I mean, in certain instances in these IPRs where you might have a base discussion of an independent claim, that's then used for a ground, and then they say, and then in the dependent claim, they say, okay, well, we're going to do an alternate tweak on that. We're going to change the theory on it. But here, that's not the case. The only reason Claim 3 was introduced and discussed was in their very own words, to provide a foundation for analyzing the obviousness of Claims 4, 5, and 12. And then, that's at Appendix 2655. And then in Appendix 2668, there's discussion in Claim 3, when they kind of flesh it out, it sounds undisputed from the other side that Zidney expressly shows the voice container in the instant message, at least in the context of Claim 3. I think that part the parties can agree on. The board then applied this and also looking at other things and then said, reading it, that petitioner consistently relies on Zidney's voice container as being the instant voice message of Claim 3 from which Claim 4 depends. So it's a natural reading. Your Honors mentioned the abuse of discretion standard, which we agree. This is something that the board is adept at determining. They you know, we might sometimes dispute as patent owner the outcome, but they're adept at understanding what was pleaded. Judge Toronto, you mentioned you know, the scope of the petition. I think that's also a key concept here. That they can't, it shouldn't be that even if there is any ambiguity, and I appreciate Ms. Keefe's candor that acknowledgement saying that the petition might have been less than clear, but it shouldn't be an Easter egg. It shouldn't be where it's like a gotcha, where something's buried in it, where they go down one theory and then we get surprised by something buried in it that's, we're not interpreting the way that they've said. The other thing we pointed out too is they
how
do not.
Can you explain how does the material on, I guess it's really 2675,
yeah,
where, which is principally at issue. How do you make sense of that as an effort to show this new element in dependent claim 4 if the instant voice message is still just the container?
Well, in that section, we read it as a parallelism between, first it says Zidney, make sure I got the right thing. In 2675, it talks about Zidney kind of first talking about, it would have been Zidney with no change of the respective functions predictably resulting in the voice container of Zidney being transmitted, and then So it talks about the instant voicemail message and then later talks about the voice container. So we see it as a parallelism. It's supporting us. I mean, both sides are are cited in the same language.
But where it's really, I think, the next sentence that's the crucial. This in turn would have resulted in the voice container being carried in a HTTP 1.1 message that includes an action field, namely the post method described above.
Yeah, but Your Honor, respectfully, we read that as the voice container as the instant voice message, equating it to but before the instant voice message. Again, it's the context also. We read it in the context of Claim 3 where they provide a predicate for it. So if they were going to go down this route, why did they choose, you know, Claim 3 wasn't even a challenge claim in this IPR. Why did they even explain it that way? It's the most, I'm not being critical, but it's just a very, their explanation just doesn't make sense. That's not the way you would have approached it. If I was drafting it on the other side, I would have built this into the discussion of Claim 3, and then you wouldn't have to do that. Or, as we noted in our briefs, they could say, hey, we're going to do something alternative here. You know, this is an alternative read, and they didn't do that.
And you don't suggest that their alternative read of Claim 4 somehow is inconsistent with what they previously attributed to Claim 3, for being a dependent claim.
No, Your Honor, I think it's more the issue you touched upon. It's just that
there could be two different versions.
There could, okay. In theory. It's just that the issue Your Honor touched upon, in that we're entitled as patent owner, given the confines and the case law on IPRs, to have something bounded by the petition. And the board interpreted what they're now admitting as a less than clear petition a certain way, and that's how we interpreted it. So it can't be something where it's tough enough as patent owner, just given the sequence of briefing, there's limited opportunities to respond. You can't have something at the outset.
Well, it's kind of tough all over, right?
It is. You're right. I tend to represent the patent owner more, but I mean, it's very, maybe I wanted to say, it's very compact. It's not very different than district court, as Your Honors are aware, and what you're you know, allow more rounds of briefing and you can revisit things. It's very concise. And that's why I think the concept that Your Honor mentioned about the being bounded by the petition is very key.
Can I ask you this? If we were to conclude that the board misread the passage in the petition and that the petition does, in fact, fairly assert that for Claim 4, the instant voice message includes the entire HTTP message, including both the data field and what comes before. Is that an outright reversal? Is there something to remand or what?
I haven't thought about that, Your Honor. We haven't briefed anything other than the issue about that we just discussed. So,
okay.
I haven't considered it. I certainly could see a remand.
Are there other issues?
I can't think of any sitting here today, Your Honor, but...
other issues not dependent on the dispute about Claim 24?
No, I'm not aware of anything with respect to Claim 4 for the cross appeal.
Okay.
But I just haven't considered it fully, so I don't want to misspeak. Let's see. The other thing is, I think for that I'll just rest on our briefs. We'll rest on our briefs with respect to the appeal issues, unless Your Honors have any questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Ms. Keith has 2 minutes for rebuttal on the cross-appeal. And maybe it's 2:38.
Thank you, Your Honors. Apologies. Very briefly, I think the very last question was about whether or not this would be a reversal as opposed to something else. And we actually briefed that in our, I'm going to get this wrong, gray brief. And we did say that this should actually be remanded because there are no other arguments. Their only argument
should not be remanded.
Should not be remanded. You can reverse. It is a pure reversal. Because they never objected to the combination having the elements. They simply said, since you use the container, you must lose.
The board, though, didn't actually find it did have it. It said even if.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. With respect to the arguments that we've heard, the only thing that I heard was somehow that patent owner wasn't on fair notice of the argument. But again, I point your honors to the language from the petition itself at 2675 and Lavian's declaration at 359 and 360, which clearly indicates that the combination would have resulted in the voice container being carried in a message that includes the action field, which is what we're saying is the mapping. And so we're no longer saying it's just the container. It is the container carried in a message that has an action field. The only reason that we gave further clarification in the reply was because it became apparent the patent owner was making a misunderstanding. And so that's why at page 2875 in our reply, we say patent owner's argument misstates the combination that we have made. And then we step through why that's a misstatement. And that's what the board ignored. By ignoring that we were no longer looking only at the container, there was not substantial evidence to support the board's decision. And then, Judge Toronto, I believe you had asked me a question about whether or not this was abuse of discretion. I don't think that it is for this one reason. I think what it is there has to have been substantial evidence to support the board's conclusion, and here there is not substantial evidence to support the board's conclusion. I think that's just a slightly different standard where abuse of discretion is used for procedural matters. And so here I think it's the substantial evidence standard that applies. The very last thing I would leave your honors with is the GE versus Raytheon case, which came out after our briefing at 983 F3rd 1334, which just says that in obviousness combinations, you look to the evidence. And what does the evidence show in the totality of the case, not necessarily exactly how the argument was placed. So we appreciate your honor's time and attention, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We will take the case under submission.
Thank you, your honors.
Next case.